The Chase Down podcast is brought to you by Indochino. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. They make suits, shirts, coats, and more, and everything is made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Indochino's process is simple. Choose your fabric, pick your customizations, and submit your measurements. Your package will be delivered straight to your door in just 2 weeks. You can get measured and design your suit at your nearest Indochino showroom, or just do it all yourself online at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Blue Wire at checkout. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com. Promo code BLUEWIRE for $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more. Incredible deal for made-to-measure clothing. You really have no excuse anymore to wear clothing that doesn't fit.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it! Young Ball continues to wear him out!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good, man. Feels like a month since we've talked last. I think that Thursday pod last week really, made me feel like everything was a little closer together. Feels like weeks.
Yeah, it has been a little while. A lot has changed since then. One of the topics that we were discussing was, hey, maybe in a couple months, Kevin Porter Jr. might take a leap, might earn a spot in the starting lineup. Over the last three games, basically, since we talked, he has averaged 3 points per game. Assists and four boards.
He looks great, though.
the flashes are really cool, good with him. He's still ahead of schedule. But again, we are kind of in that early part of the season. We're almost at the one quarter mark. And since we are at the one quarter mark, I just want to kind of get some general feelings out about this team. Obviously, Darius Garland had his best game of the year and really seems to be coming on. Sexton, I think his overall efficiency has suffered a little bit just because he's trying to expand his game, which is okay. And Jetty seems to be out of the slump. So how are you feeling about the young Cavs so far?
I don't know. I'm not hugely different other than I'm really happy Darius had such a good – I mean, really everyone had a good game against Milwaukee except defensively. But as right. We've noted, Justin, defense is for nerds.
It is. It's for nerds. It's for dorks. Why do we care about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, they got wrecked defensively against probably the best team in the East in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I'm not in the business of worrying about that. And nor should you be if you have any pride. So they really, really played probably their best offensive game of the season by my estimation. I mean, they literally hit 10 threes in a quarter, which was just nirvana for a while. Mm-hmm. Garland put up 21-6 with only one turnover, which has to be his best turnover to assist turnover ratio as
Absolutely.
A pro by a country mile. Jetty Osmond continued to look really, really solid as he's picked up a little extra playmaking and usage. It was just kind of the perfect game for what you want out of this young core. Larry Nance continues to shoot the absolute shit out of the ball. And on his miniature renaissance offensively, I think we're going to need to talk about that. But yeah, I mean, Garland specifically just looks so good and is really pulling without hesitation, especially as a spot-up guy, which I love.
Yeah, it was nice to see him bounce back against after a poor showing against Orlando. He was efficient as a scorer in that game, but 8 turnovers, obviously you don't like seeing that. He had 5 the previous game against Brooklyn. But the nice thing is he is starting to pull. We're now at 9 games, basically, which started at that November 14th game against the Heat, where he took 7 threes and we're like, hey, this is a good sign. Well, that's continued. He's taken about 6 threes a game, shooting 46% on those over the last 9, which is half the season so far. So he's looking a lot more confident, and I think we're starting to see that things are opening up for him as he takes those shots. The nice thing as well is for him to go from that game against Orlando to playing another long, great defense in Milwaukee and just making better decisions. How quickly he would take the shots with no hesitation was great. Made some really good reads as a passer, and it's one of those high watermark games that you and I talk about that shows you what he can be in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that he was kind of learning from a pretty nightmarish game from a turnover standpoint in Orlando. You know, only one turnover and was still a very active passer and made some pretty stylish passes along the way.
He did. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, his last five games, he's still only averaging 11 points, which does not, I'm sorry, no, that's his season, I'm sorry. His last five games, he's averaging 16 points.
Yeah.
6 threes a game, 53% from three, 48% from the field. Half of his field goal attempts right now per game are threes in the last five.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of trends we wanted to see. Like, we were cool with him not being a crazy, insane three-level scorer early on. What we wanted to see was him learning to affect the game as a shooter first and then build out his game from there. And I think we're starting to see that happen.
Absolutely. He looks a lot leaner. And I think early in the season, if he had an 8 turnover game, or even if he had a bad shooting night, you would see that carry over to the next game where he was kind of second guessing. There's less of that now. You can tell he's moving freer. His decisions, his decision-making is way more decisive. And that's really, really good to see. It is interesting that over these last this last week or so here, with Jetty getting more touches offensively, it actually has kind of had a downtick in his actual assists. He's been more aggressive as a scorer, and he's been way more involved offensively. He's been really efficient lately, which you love to see. But it is kind of interesting that he's not really doing much playmaking over this stretch. Obviously, he's still giving the ball up. He's not a black hole or anything like that. But we've seen other guys step up. We've seen Larry Nance, as you mentioned, who's been very good offensively lately. Colin Sexton had a good week from a playmaking standpoint, especially the last two games against Milwaukee and Orlando. Kevin Love has been involved. So you're really starting to see the ball move with a little bit more energy. And I think as guys like Garland are a little more decisive, you're going to see those assist numbers increase, because they're actually going to be taking shots off those passes instead of dribbling.
And it's also worth noting, you're going to start seeing them actually making some shots if they're actually generating good looks. And the best way to get assists, Justin, is to have your teammate make the shot after you set them up. Which
I've heard that. I've heard rumors of that.
The Cavs have not always done a great job of the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I just have really liked what I'm seeing out of Garland. Obviously, the three-pointer isn't going to stay this hot. I mean, 5 of 7 is something that you like to see, but you're never going to expect to see, because no one shoots that good of a percentage over the course of a full season. But the attempt totals, especially relative to his total field goal attempts, is really what I love to see. Everything else is kind of is Gucci from there. I mean, in his last five games, his true shooting percentage is 64%. I mean, that's what you want to see. You want to see a guy who finds a way to be efficient, and that's while not getting to the line at all. That just shows you how valuable the three-point shot is. And if he's not taking that, he just becomes a lot less valuable of a player. So I'm really, really geeked about how he's played as of late. And
and we needed it. I think Cavs fans in general really needed this.
I absolutely needed it. I was getting a little stressed, you know, not panicky. You know, it's one of my pet peeves that I feel like you can't say that, hey, this isn't going very well, without like having people go, hey, it's, you know, we're 10 games of the year. It's like, yeah, I know, but like, we also have to, like, you know, we have to at least speculate and take a look at what the information we have. So,
yeah, I think the fact that we are now in December and his season-long average is already up to 38% from three, and he is taking more threes over these last 9 games, as we've said. I think if you would have told us that when we were starting to have those concerns after or before the Miami game, I think that's when we were kind of expressing that. If you would have told us that at that point, I think both of us would have been pretty happy about that development arc.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting JXT Billy in the chat just mentioned that we've also been putting him in the corner for a lot more easy threes off of other people's creation. I've noticed that too. I mean,
he's more catch and shoot for sure.
He's getting a lot of open catch and shoot looks, especially when he drifts that corner. When guys go baseline and have nowhere to go, he's their release valve. And that release is so quick, Justin, that even when guys close out on him hard, he's been able to make those kind of shots.
No, I completely agree. And speaking of catch and shoot opportunities, it was noted today by Chris Fedor that the Cavs had their first completely healthy practice. That means Dylan Windler participating, John Henson participating. Both of those guys apparently look good. Still probably doesn't mean that we're going to see Windler back just yet. Might be a few games away. Need to see how he reacts to that stress and to being out there on the court. But the fact that he's nearing a return really is exciting. And I think we're at a point now at the start of December here where I'm starting to anticipate things. I'm starting to anticipate the schedule lightening up. We still have about 2 weeks of BS here. And then the Cavs are actually going to have an opportunity to take what they've learned from these tough matchups and play teams that are a little bit more in their weight class. We also have the anticipation building on what this team's going to look like with John Henson and Dylan Windler in the mix. There's a lot of things that excite me, and I'm glad, knock on wood, that we've made it this far and you still have Love and Tristan healthy and in the mix.
I totally agree. I think I'm really looking forward to this team getting all the way healthy and Bayline actually getting to play a little bit. Would you play a 10-man rotation with this team?
Yeah, I think I would. It's so hard to cut guys out of the rotation. I think the biggest thing is we have a lot of guys that deserve minutes. Like, I think it would send the wrong message to completely take Kevin Porter Jr. out of the rotation. I think he should have his minutes cut to some extent. I think that's going to give him an opportunity to take a step back, allow him to see the game a little slower from the bench. They can work on his mechanics. When he's not being counted on for as significant of a role, I think that there's an opportunity for growth and development there. But he absolutely deserves the minutes. With how hard he plays on the defensive end and the team basketball he's playing, you have to keep him in the rotation. I think you just chip away at the minutes of guys, whether it be Jetty Osman, Kevin Porter Jr., Deli, Clarkson, all those guys, I think you can cut some of their minutes and open up time.
Yeah, I think right now if you're looking to cut someone, and it's funny because I've been one of his biggest advocates all year, but Deli has just been so painful as of late as he works on rebuilding that jump shot. He's under 10% from three for the year, which is not great, Bob. Yeah. And, you know, he's functionally unplayable if he can't shoot at all. And, you know, if I'm going to punish someone, you know, it's easy to say, let's get Clarkson off the floor because he hogs the ball too much, blah, 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 blah. Clarkson's super good. And in terms of when you're kind of evaluating the talent level of this roster, he's unfortunately for the Cavs near the top. And he needs to play. And oftentimes when things do, he does pound the rock, but it's kind of a chicken or the egg situation where it's like, does he pound the rock because no one else on the bench unit knows what the hell they're doing? Or does no one else know what the hell they're doing because he pounds the rock too much? I tend to believe the former and the latter are a little bit of a mix. But in the meantime, he's going to have to play. So I think Deli is really the one that if you have to cut someone, it's just getting harder and harder to justify Deli out there.
And I think that becomes more feasible with Garland playing with more confidence. I think you can start to stagger a little bit more. I think we're already starting to see Sexton playing a few more point guard minutes. And I think that that's something he's going to be asked to eventually do with the second unit, whether or not he's starting. We talked about it last podcast. I still think he finishes this year as a starter, but I do think you're going to see them stagger Sexland a little bit more because those are probably your two most reliable point guards, especially if Clarkson gets moved. Billy also mentioned in the Twitch feed, do you think McKinney gets fully cut out of the rotation? Which, unfortunately, I think he does. I would like to keep him in the rotation, but given the priorities of this team aren't winning, it's player development, I do think that he's going to be the odd man out there.
Here's why you cut McKinney out of the rotation is exactly that. It's he is not in any way a meaningful part of this franchise's future. And you cannot say the same for Jetty Osman, Kevin Porter, Dylan Windler. Every other wing-type body on this roster needs minutes.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
It's not like if this team was competing for a playoff spot, maybe you say, okay, get the kids the hell out of here. Sorry, KPJ. Your flashes are nice, but we need McKinney. That's where that guy kind of makes sense, but not for what this version of the Cavs are, I don't think. One last thing on Dele that I think is important to note, because I think if you ask John Boeheim, he would say, well, he gets us into our offense. He plays good fundamental defense. These bench units are hemorrhaging on both ends oftentimes. Yeah. It's not the intended effect, whether maybe we're missing something and he's providing some kind of intangible value that is harder to see on our end. Sure, you know, whatever. But in the functional reality, these units are getting slaughtered every time they're out there. And I don't think Dele is adding the kind of value that you're hoping he'd add.
Yeah. I mean, the saying is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, this has been broke as hell. I think there's plenty of room for tinkering and, you know,
is it Beeline or Bayline? Kings OW just asked in the chat. I feel like I get it wrong a lot.
Yeah. I think it's Bayline. I think that's the way that I've heard those that interact with him.
I'm a failure.
Just think he's your bae. Okay?
He's my bae.
There you go.
Well, he doesn't know what bae means because he's a billion years old.
No, I think he's got experience. I think he knows absolutely everything. I think he's like the Oracle. He knows all. But if you're looking to get something for your bae this holiday season, do our guys at Harry's have a hookup for you? Looking for a great gift for someone in your life? Well, Harry's has what you need. Harry's is a gift that's both thoughtful and practical. Listeners of this show can get $5 off any Harry's shave set by heading to harrys.com/bluewire for free shipping that ends on December 16th, so you better act now. Harry's is a great deal for you and for him. Holiday sets start at just $20, and that's within Secret Santa limit. And Harry Blades refills are just as low as $2 each, so you and your guy will save money over time. It comes with a ready-to-gift in a handsome holiday gift box, and your gift gives back. 1% of each sale will be donated to charitable organizations with Harry's.
Wow.
As a special offer for fans of the show, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets, when you go to harrys.com/bluewire. Plus, you'll get free shipping. Each Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle with an option to engrave.
Whoa!
Option engrave, Carter. 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shave gel for rich lather. That is a tongue twister. Travel cover to protect your blades. And packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Just go to harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire.
I swear to God, guys, if you don't take advantage of that deal, what are you even doing with your life? You know, shipping.
We are
shipping
Harry's men.
Yeah, we're Harry's men through and through. And, you know, I think free shipping is such a nice feature for them to offer. Because, you know, shipping can be a bit of a burden sometimes, Justin. You know, the holiday rush is here. You have to ship orders quickly, effectively, affordably. But how do you keep track of all those orders? Decide which carrier to use or if you're getting the best rates. Luckily, our friends at ShipStation can help. With just a few clicks, you'll be managing orders, printing labels, and getting those products out the door. And, of course, delivered on time for the holidays. ShipStation works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, and UPS. They had one on here that I'd never heard of the last time I did this read, and they cut it out of the read. So I think that was the right play. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Now, Justin, you just need to take the hassle out of your holiday shipping this year. Let ShipStation handle it all with ease. Just use our offer code BLUE to get a 60-day free trial. That's 2 months free of no hassle, stress-free holiday shipping. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in BLUE. That's ShipStation.com, enter offer code BLUE. ShipStation. Say it with me, Justin. Make
ship happen. My goodness. You got to make ship happen. Speaking of make ship happen and making shit happen is Luka Doncic. I don't know if you watch Mavs Lakers, but the Mavericks once again got a great win. I believe it was Matt Moore that was talking about this, that the Mavericks still have the best offense in NBA history at this point. It is not regressing. And they got another quality win tonight over the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, this team is not good, I would like to note. There's a bunch of losers all over this roster that...
Jeez, you're not a DeLon Wright fan? What the hell's wrong with you?
Like, I don't believe in most of the members of this roster, and it really does feel like one part fit. I think this roster makes a lot of sense. I think it's one part Rick Carlisle being a great coach, and then it's several parts Luka Doncic having just a pretty insane control level over this offense. So I know we're going to talk about Luka, so let's just dive in. Because part of me doesn't want to, because I find that part of me just wants to have some fun with this. Like, yeah, I'm already seeing it starting to be turned into
getting shitty, is what you're saying. And the conversation around Luka has been that way since he, or even before he came into the NBA. The way he was discussed as a prospect, the way everyone had to take a polarized stand on him one way or another. Unfortunately, it just seems like everyone has to take some sort of extreme stance on him. And I don't think that we should follow in those footsteps. I don't think that that's the way we should discuss him.
So anyway, what I wanted to say was he's only getting so much love because he's white. just kidding.
You know what this team reminds me of, actually? This team reminds me of the 2007 Cavs, where they're starting to figure out with role players, they're starting to figure out what type of guys you'd want to have around Luka, but it's not all there yet. They don't have the role guys that can really elevate the team defensively the way that the 2009 Cavs had, but they do make sense to some extent. They've got all the right archetypes.
Like, having a gunner from three like THJ or Seth Curry, that makes a lot of sense. Having big lead guards that can defend and hit open shots and do some secondary creation like a Delon Wright, yeah, that makes sense. Having good role men to pair, bouncy role men that to pair with Kristaps being able to space the floor, that makes sense. Maxi Kleba, Dwight Powell, they could do that. They're just not quite there yet. You know, and then they have some rugged wing defenders, you know, like a Dorian Finney-Smith who just gets the dirty work done. So I really think this roster makes sense. It's just most of the guys aren't quite good enough, you know. Like, I just think you'll see a lot of these guys in a playoff series look a little overtaxed.
It's not going to be great in the playoffs, and that's going to be really annoying because the takes are going to be assigned to the star players rather than a thorough kind of breakdown of their roster. And
yeah,
I apologize if I was a little distracted as you were talking there. My dog just threw up at my feet, not on me, so I didn't pull a full morgue, but we are in a danger zone right now.
Do we need to get the elevator music out while you clean this up, Justin?
No, it's fine. I'm a gamer. I can work my way through this.
Call Trish in, man.
I might.
Have her, and not to clean it up, just to have her cover while you clean it up.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, I just think, like, one thing that's interesting to me about this Mavs team that I wonder what you think is, so a lot of there's been a lot of discussion about how Porzingis hasn't quite figured it out yet. Like, he's averaging 17-9, but he hasn't really been putting up the big numbers that you're hoping. Not a ton of big splash games for him. And part of me wonders if he would be better served playing the five, where you're not, there's not that many people who are going to beat him up. And if they got kind of a, or at least alongside a true stretch four, that even if it's a bulkier stretch four that can switch up and guard the five, so Zinger doesn't have to.
Stop trying to get them to trade for Kevin Love.
I mean, Carter, honestly, though, like that archetype makes a lot of sense to me. What do you think about that? Because I do think Zinger is a sneaky good player at the rim. Like, he obviously has those putback dunks that he got a ton of hype for his rookie year. Like, I think he could be a useful role man in the right context.
No, I completely agree. I think the one hang-up you'd have with playing him at center is that he just doesn't rebound well enough.
No, he
doesn't rebound well as you'd expect someone at his size to do. So that does make things a little more difficult, which, again, as you said, it would be a perfect fit alongside Kevin Love because he's someone that can move up to the five, that can provide the rebounding and make up for some of the deficiencies that Porzingis has. But I think the one thing that you have to be a little encouraged with Dallas lately is that he is making more of an impact defensively. He is altering shots at the rim.
He should be so frustrating around the rim.
It's just not consistent, but it is trending in the right direction, which I think has to be encouraging if you are a Mavs fan.
Yeah, I mean, they went into Staples and kind of took it to the Lakers in that third quarter, and I just think that this team kind of needed a statement win like that. I don't think they're good enough to make real noise just because I think the rest of the roster isn't there yet. But
no, that is absolutely fine.
Yeah. I mean, Luka's 20. This is fine. I think that what's interesting is there is this, I joked about it earlier, but there is this, why are we so excited about Luka's 30, 10, and 10 when we have so much fun dogging Russ and Harden for putting up crazy stat lines? And it's like, well, we do that because we watch the games.
Right.
And, and you know, it's funny. I always talk about this with LeBron where, I'm always hesitant to put anyone ahead of LeBron still, because I just have this belief, this preternatural belief in his ability to control games. Because I just think his knowledge and feel is so advanced compared to even his other superstar peers like Giannis or Kawhi. I think that's where Doncic is really, that's why Doncic's 30, 10 and 10s feel different, because they have this level of like this chess mastery that I don't think you see a lot of stars have, especially not at age 20.
Yeah. And Luka does go to the free throw line a ton. But again, he goes 48% of the time, 48% of his possessions end with him going to the line, whereas Harden, it's 60%. That is a difference. The majority of Harden ones are ending with him going to the line. And I think part of the frustration with Harden too is if this was the first year that Harden was doing this, we would absolutely be losing our minds. And I think
we
should lose our minds when we look at what he's doing offensively. The thing is, with Harden, we have passed the point of, oh my God, this guy is a transcendent offensive talent. Look what this guy can do. He's won an MVP. He has proven everything that he needs to prove in the NBA, except whether or not he can win in the playoffs. Luka hasn't been to the playoffs yet. He is 20 years old. We can enjoy this as a fresh experience. There are so many benchmarks that he needs to hit that Harden already has. So I think it's okay to celebrate kind of the rise up and celebrate this and enjoy it as something fresh when we've seen Harden do this before. Obviously not to the tune of 39 points per game, but we know that James Harden can do this.
Yeah, he's 20. Come on. Sometimes it's as simple as he's 20 and this is awesome. So no. I'm sure there's a bit of hyperbole from basketball Twitter, who is, as I've critiqued in the past, more interested in being right than being accurate. Like,
and also skipping steps. I don't know if you saw. Yeah. Shout out to our guy Anthony Doyle. But we were having a discussion where he basically said someone had commented, it's really likely that Luka may end up as the greatest player of all time, and Anthony was saying, oh, well, yeah, I agree. We've never seen anyone do this at 20. Well, no. So, first of all,
we've never seen anyone play center like Carl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's
also
accurate, and he's awesome. And I remember when we started doing this with Towns. And what it does is when these guys don't come close to these heights, then we turn and shit on them.
Yeah.
And it's a huge mistake.
And I was about to do the typical thing, just bringing up obvious points. Like, okay, well, if you're going to pass Michael Jordan, LeBron, you probably have to be a great defensive player, which I don't think he has that kind of upside. We don't have to do that. We can just enjoy him achieving the actual benchmarks. And when you're talking about something like greatest of all time, there's a massive longevity factor to that. What you do at your peak isn't as relevant. We saw Tracy McGrady arguably have a higher peak than Kobe Bryant, but I don't think anyone in the right mind would put Tracy McGrady over Kobe all time, just because of one season.
A lot of people put Shaq or Kobe over Shaq, even though everyone agrees that Shaq at his best was better than Kobe at his best.
Yeah, Almost Shaq ever. Probably had the greatest season in NBA history, individual season. And I don't think many people have him in that GOAT status. So longevity is a massive factor, and I don't think we have to rush to that. I don't understand if that's what you need to go to discuss what Luka's doing this year. I really think you're missing out on the basketball experience. And
I don't think it's a need to go to thing. I just think, I mean, maybe we're being too mean because people just get excited and then like they just start dreaming big. Like, I mean, and you know what? If I were a Mavs fan, if I were Kirk Henderson, I would be thinking all these things unabashed and happy to do
that. Really the worst thing is that Kirk has to benefit from this. I mean, you just hate to see that.
By the way, I will note you said shit earlier, and that's the first time you've ever cursed on the podcast before me.
Oh, wow. Oh.
So mark that explicit rating, you piece of shit.
No, we're allowed one. The second one is where you have to make explicit. So now you've just pushed us over the threshold.
Couldn't disagree last. You're moving goalposts on me. I think it's poor form.
Is it that obvious? Damn it.
Yeah, it is.
Speaking of moving goalposts, so Los Angeles Lakers are obviously a team that has been on both sides of the moving goalposts, from fans on both sides of the aisle, to borrow a phrase.
Are you both sidesing this?
I am. No, but I want to talk about the Lakers a little bit, because obviously they're fresh on my mind watching them play the Mavericks here. And I also had the discussion today where one of the listeners of the podcast messaged me and was just asking my thoughts on where this team would rank among LeBron's best teams ever. And he asked if this was the best LeBron team ever, to which I responded, I don't believe it's top four, which isn't necessarily to shit on the Lakers.
Nope. LeBron's been on a lot of very good teams.
Yeah. I think I'd probably put it outside the top five.
Can we do that exercise real quick? Just cause it's a fun one. Even
that's what I was thinking.
Some other shit.
I would like to get your thoughts on this. Or do you want me to go first, because I've already given it some thought?
Oh, I'll start. I know exactly who my best LeBron team ever. It's the second year of the Miami Heat.
Correct.
I mean, that team was bullies in a way that I have not quite seen a team be a bully. Like the high-trapping defense, Bosch at the five, just LeBron when he had his – I just want to shoot 60% and 40% from the field and from three, respectively. That was LeBron at his best, in my opinion.
Crack the code LeBron.
And I think he's gotten – it's funny because I think he's gotten savvier offensively since.
I agree.
And more skilled. But that is where you really felt his raw athleticism. That's where he just – you could throw him on the best scorer whenever you wanted and just ruin their life 1-5. I've never seen a 1-5 defender quite that devastating.
Yeah.
He was just so good, and Wade still had a little bit left, and Bosch just made sense. They picked up Allen that year as well, I believe. No, it was the year after.
Yeah. No,
was Allen only won one more title. He played with them the year gotcha. After when they beat the Spurs. Point is, they were really fucking good. So I think that team was better. I think probably the year after, the team that beat the Spurs was better. I still maintain that's the best finals I'll ever see from a competitive gameplay standpoint. Just perfect basketball on both sides of the ball. And then I think probably 2016 and 2017 Cavs were better.
I had those four teams, and the fifth, I think, is the interesting one. I think 2009 Cavs.
I think this Lakers team is much better than the 2009 Cavs.
Obviously, Anthony Davis is better.
AD is so good.
So I'm cheating to some extent because I'm also factoring in how good LeBron is.
It matters.
Yeah, I think the difference between 2009 LeBron and 2019 LeBron is significant. And holy shit, I can't believe we're 10 years removed from that. Obviously, we need to see a full season of that, but that was just such a damn good team. Went 39-2 at home, which they easily could have gone 40-1 if they didn't rest everybody in that last game. They were just such a complete unit. Obviously, you don't have anybody that's as good as Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis at his peak has a very good claim for best teammate LeBron has ever had. And I think this Lakers team is good.
I think Anthony Davis is almost certainly LeBron's best teammate ever, given how quickly Wade fell off and how poor of a fit they kind of were together offensively. It was not clean.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I said before, I think this Lakers team is a legitimate contender. I do think we do have to see 82 games of it, though. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the season you'd say, okay, yeah, you were right. 2009 team was better. I do still have a lot of reverence for that team. I really think that they were a contender, and few shots went differently. I think they would have had a shot against the Lakers. But I think with the defense slipping up a little bit lately with this Lakers squad, it makes things a little interesting because there's two factors to consider there. One, LeBron's proven that he can turn it back on defensively. He's probably playing his best defense since 2013. At least for regular season. But now that he's done that, I think that there's some flip the switch potential here, and it's going to make it a little tougher to evaluate this Lakers squad.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like this squad. I just think that the AD LeBron, they figured out how to make it work with a five, in my opinion. Like, yeah, they can always downsize, but people were too quick, including myself. And actually, I think I should take a bigger L here. Is like I just said, AD needs to grow up and play the five. But the fact that they've been able to figure it out with Howard or McGee means that they're just fucking massive. And it's really, really hard to generate looks with all that size. And that size also gives LeBron a little bit more margin for error to gamble and to play a little more freely defensively, where – you know, when you play small ball, everyone has to be locked in so much. So I think that's why so often the Cavs looked overmatched, where he's playing the full-time four a lot of times. And because really, it just by the end, it was just Tristan, Love, and Fry as the bigs on the team.
Yeah, and I think you got to give Frank Vogel credit, too, for the coaching job that he's done. Both in figuring out how to make AD work at the four and alongside a five, as you mentioned, getting buy-in from LeBron defensively. I think that's something that's a little bit easier when you do have him coming off a season where he's missed the playoffs for the first time in forever and where you do have more doubters than ever. I think it's easy to get him to buy in. Keeping that buy-in for the rest of the regular season, I think, is going to be a little bit of a challenge. Because if he needs to play at this level defensively to win a 5-point game over Memphis or whoever in February, is he really going to give you that type of effort? But I do think that this is a team that's probably made for the playoffs more than it is for the regular season. I think it's great that they have Kuzma coming off the bench. I think that makes the most sense from a rotation standpoint. Dwight Howard's fallen off a little bit lately, but you're still getting good minutes from him. So I think sustainability is really the biggest question that I would have with this team.
I mean, my biggest question for this team is they just need more pick and roll ball handlers.
Yeah.
Because
that's a big
this team is getting wrecked when LeBron sits, which isn't new for LeBron teams. Like, and we've said this a lot, like LeBron defines so much of what you do offensively that it's not that big of a surprise when it's not going well when he sits. But with that said, it just, you have to be at least have someone who can function. And it's not Rajon Rondo at this point. Kuzma is not an initiator. He's more of a play finisher. So, like, yeah, if they found – I've said this a billion times, and, you know, off the court issues notwithstanding, they should be just calling Darren Collison every day. Like, hey, you can run a competent pick and roll. Like
they should be calling Jamal Crawford.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he pulls a little more than you want. You want a guy, in my opinion, that just like can destabilize a defense a little more.
I don't think a vet like that would be a problem when it's alongside LeBron. Like I think that that's more a function of what teams he's been on the last couple of years.
Maybe so. I don't know. I think that they're a player away, and everyone keeps saying it's Iggy, and like, yes, they could use an extra wing defender that's not LeBron, because I certainly don't believe in KCP as a wing stopper. Danny Green is good, but if you could throw out and I think Avery Bradley's done a pretty good job this year in a not quite a bounce back season, but something approaching that.
Yeah. He's shown that he belongs in a rotation, which hasn't been the case the last couple of years.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, Iggy is less of the thing as much as they just need a creator on ball, because Rondo is too far the other way and as a non-scorer, and then Kuzma isn't really someone who creates for others very much. There's just too much stagnation when LeBron sits, and it's not going to play. It's not going to hold, you know. Like, they need like a homeless man's Drew Holiday to kind of replicate the good minutes with AD.
No, absolutely. And I hate bringing up Kirk Henderson for a second time on this podcast, but here's another shout out. He mentioned, because I guess some Mavericks fans were talking about bringing Iguodala on, he's like, whatever your expectations are for regular season Iggy, reduce them by 50%, both in the way that he's regressed over the last few years and the fact that he just hasn't played in a long time. So I do think that he might help things out and might be that poor man's Drew Holiday at this stage of his career. But I
just don't think that's the archetype they need. Like, they have Danny Green. Like, he'll help because he's not KCP. That's the reason you go get him, is because
KCP's been playing better lately.
Yeah, but I don't like him, and I don't think he's someone you want to play. You know, he's not a go to war with in a 7-game series kind of guy.
God, like,
if you can upgrade on him, then that's fine.
You just sit around burning bridges. Now Rich Paul's going to cancel on us. We're totally going to get him.
Well, you hate his most famous client. So what's up with that?
Come on. I don't hate Bledsoe that much. I just think the Bucks would be a whole lot better with Brogdon instead of him.
All our listeners are rolling their eyes.
Well, except for Ty. He doesn't listen to us anymore.
No, he's been getting into too many Twitter fights recently.
Has he? I haven't noticed. I've been off Twitter more.
Oh, more power to you.
Why are you being cynical, Dad? Why are you being cynical, Dad, in our Discord?
Listen, man, we're just playing the waiting game here before I leave you forever, functionally. Bro, Kylie literally just yelled at her stomach yesterday. Like, just said,
get
out!
Thought you meant just now. I was like,
No, she just yelled at – she just does that on occasion right now. Because she's just – bro, she's so pregnant. It's crazy.
Well,
it's time. I'm
proof that yelling at someone before and after birth helps them turn out perfectly normal. So I would advise that she continues doing that.
It's going to work. Trust me. Fetuses or infants in the womb are really, really into verbal abuse.
I'm excited to see what podcast Matt Leave Carter is going to be like, or what, once you get back in the swing of things. Tyre Carter is comedically perfect for this podcast,
especially for the dead the dog days of the season,
right? Which you're going to be exhausted for a lot of that, so I'm excited to see what we do there.
Well, statistically, and for the rest of my life,
I well, you never know. I'm excited to see how you respond to all the fill-in co-hosts and whatnot as well. That's going to be interesting to see.
I won't be listening to the podcast.
What? Now I'm offended.
Oh, I'll do my best, but who knows? I hesitate to commit to anything pre-parenthood, because who knows how the hell this works? Not me. Man.
Yeah, well, I don't think any parents know how it works. So I just think that the Chase Down is great lullaby material for your child. So I
puts our listeners to sleep twice a week.
Absolutely. Which, hey, big shout out as we wrap this up. I want to give a massive shout out to all our listeners. We had our highest download month in possibly forever, at least in the last few years. So I want to give a big thanks to everybody. That really does mean a lot. Like the Cavs, we are a work in progress. We are constantly trying to improve. At some point, I might have to put Carter Sexton to the bench. So there's a lot of parallels there. So I do appreciate all the support that you guys give us.
Yeah, I didn't know you were setting me up for something, but yeah.
Well, I thought maybe you'd want to show your appreciation too before you abandon all of us.
We're geeked that you still listen, and definitely our best month of the post-LeBron era. I don't think people all the way understand how much of a cheat code of engagement LeBron is. You know, like I remember the Fear the Sword post site numbers pre and post, and it was just like a freaking crater because, you know, if you just write an article that says LeBron weighs in on X, it's guaranteed like 30,000 hits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the fact that you guys have stuck with us so loyally, it's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And I think Lima also tweeted out a picture of just how good the crowd still was at the queue. I think the Cavs are the only lottery team in the top 12 for attendance. So I'm constantly blown away by just
the
how
Rock,
awesome.
You mean?
Oh, did I say the queue?
Get wrecked.
Damn, I think that's the first time I've done that. Anyways, I'm always impressed by Cavs fans, and you guys are the best. So thank you so much for supporting us, no matter which way you do it. If you want to subscribe to our premium feed, just Google Chase Down Premium, probably the easiest way to find it. Or
can you read the URL? Just because.
I will not read the dash right now. But you can find us there and support us. We got breakdowns. I'm going to have a rookie report for you guys. Quick reactions to breaking news and whatnot. So just a supplemental thing. It's basically like Patreon, except you're donating straight to us and getting some extra content from it. So we do appreciate that. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/chasedownpod. You can support us the old school way by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe to help cook those books. And if you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com and we'll respond with a link. So thank you so much to all you guys. No matter how you choose to support us, we really do appreciate your support. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to Carter. And until next time, go Cavs.